Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Hundreds rally in Portland against proposed Planned Parenthood cuts. The four American hostages are killed by Somali pirates, and a Latvian moviegoer is shot for chewing his popcorn too loudly.
In his country? No. No, I'm sorry.
Popcorn chews you?
No, it's Latvia too.
Chews you. No.
Okay.
There we go.
As always, my friends. Really? Have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed and pure unbridled cuteness will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent.
Maybe.
And when you began this hour, we won't measure at the end. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. This Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011.
She's making that claim. I'm not. You're standing alone on that.
More than 400 people lined the streets around Planned Parenthood in North Portland in support of the organization that could lose all of its federal funding. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a budget bill over the weekend that includes an amendment that strips funding for Planned Parenthood in fiscal year 2011. Planned Parenthood says 75% of its patients at the clinics in Oregon and Southwest Washington need the funding to receive reproductive services like birth control, cancer screening, and family planning. Rory Tharp of the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon said, in this economic climate, family planning is so important, and we can't believe the House would vote to eliminate the funding. The Republican sponsor of the amendment says taxpayers shouldn't support an organization that provides the most abortions in the United States, but Planned Parenthood says the money doesn't directly fund abortions because that's already against the law. They also say abortions only account for 4% of their services utilized nationwide.
Also, there's huge bowls of rubbers there. And really, let's be honest, there's no societal ill that rubbers can't cure. There is really, you just think about any one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which are, Dawn Taylor?
Pestilence, greed, and Blitzen.
Okay. Here's the thing. You get credit for this. You get credit for the fact that every one of those answers came from a different field. One was correct, one was wrong, one was Disney, and one was Nicholas. So, I mean, so you get little, you get panache points for that.
Thank you.
I believe they are famine, pestilence, war, and plague.
Ah.
I could be wrong about that, though.
That sounds about right.
Hey, does it seem like there ought to be an Italian place called Pestilence?
Pesto, yeah.
There's something there.
Pesto.
Somebody else did the other work there.
Or maybe there's an Italian chef named Lance, and he's known as Pesto Lance.
Maybe.
That could work.
All right. Well, we've done half the toil there. Somebody else should just take that joke, and they should finish it. And, you know, just remember where that came from. You know, you think of any societal ill, any problem, anything that that thwarts your happiness, anything that impedes your forward progress on this planet, and really, the odds are like 98% it could be cured or prevented with rubbers.
Yeah, if just dumb people had used birth control, and in many cases even smart people.
Not even dumb people, yeah,
just people.
Just people, really. Because let's be honest, when they say like Planned Parenthood, there's no planning of parenthood that happens there. Let's not traffic in illusions about that. Nobody goes in and goes, I'm dying to get pregnant, but I just can't seem to. Here's the thing, if you...
Yeah, they're really more about the planned non-parenthood.
Yeah, because if you're at Planned Parenthood, let's be honest, your ass is exactly the kind of person that gets pregnant all the time. I'm not passing judgment, I'm just saying that that's true.
I'm not sure that's true, that if you're at Planned Parenthood, you're someone who gets pregnant all the time.
Look, it's also not true that if you're on TriMet, you know, or at a food court at Lloyd's Center, you get pregnant all the time. But I mean... Let's be honest. We can speak.
Which explains why I don't ride the Max. Let me tell you.
We can speak in generalities here, and I think there's a few things we know. One is if you're standing outside the Cajun Grill, you use the phrase "baby daddy" a lot. I mean, that's just the way that life works. So, hey, look, and I'm not saying that I'm not criticizing. I'm saying I'm glad Planned Parenthood was there because. We've talked about our own foibles as teenagers and, like, the idea that you got to, like, stumble into an Albertsons Food Mart and try to shoplift some rubbers without anybody catching you. Especially in a small town where you go there and somebody's going to go, hey, buying some, going to be having some sex? Hey, everybody, Rick's going to be having some sex. And the next aisle over is going to be the mom or the dad of some girl that you have been stooping or hoping to. And they're not going to be fans of that for any number of reasons, especially because...
Well, there's that Emerson boy buying rubbers. Well, we know what he's up to.
That Rick.
You're not study date my ass.
Oh, so I'm just saying Planned Parenthood serve an actual purpose. They fill a genuine need, and I'm not just saying that. I think we ought to just... If you could just rain condoms down... on most of the populated areas of planet Earth, and then also, you know, get people to actually use them and not think that they're going to end up in the place with the guy with the horns and the stick, I think we'd be better off as a people. Look, I'm just saying, there's a plan.
I agree with you.
There's a Planned Parenthood like two blocks from my house. I see the girls in the Raiders hoodies hanging outside. Yeah. I know what kind of people traffic that place. But look.
It's those kinds of girls, is it?
Yes. Yes, it is, Dawn. What do you mean?
It just had that sound to it.
Those kinds of girls, you mean girls named Brandy? Yes. Yes, it is.
With the Tanya Harding too tight ponytail and the perm bangs.
I was just going to say the scrunchie and then like the blonde and the black roots, you know, where it's like the whole, you know. Let me ask you this. You're a woman, Dawn.
Marginally, sure.
The thing about dyeing your hair, it seems to me like that is just, that's a Sisyphean trap. Because once you dye your hair, you're screwed.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got to just keep dyeing it forever because then otherwise the roots are going to grow out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I mean, is that a thing that, I mean, I guess maybe that's the end of my questioning there. I don't really have anywhere else to go.
That's why when you get older, it's like I'm approaching that point where I realize sometime in the next, like, 5 years or so, I'm personally going to have to make that decision where I'm going to have to cut my hair off really, really short. And just let all of the gray grow in. But I'm going to have to cut it short first or else it's going to look really awkward.
You have to pretend you have cancer for a month or so.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Just wrap my head in a scarf.
You're just going to go all the way down. You'd be like that chick from The Walking Dead. Just go all the way down to the scalp and let it grow out. Every now and again, here's the thing. Especially,
that looks really great on skinny chicks. Fat chicks, not so much. I don't think it would be a good look for me. Fat, bald chicks... rarely, unless they're like older women who are leading like women's studies groups or something, and they're really like charismatic. Mostly, it's not a very good look.
Ooh, who's the guy that brought Private Pyle? I don't even know what I was saying. Oh, but in Portland, especially, you see every now and again. I was just going to note this. You see every now and again in Portland, chicks that have the shaved head. Where it kind of works.
Yeah.
It's sort of hot in a strange way.
Oh, yeah. I think if you're already, like, sort of, like, slender and cute and have kind of a prettiness to you, it can... Or if you have, like, that great angular kind of androgynous sort of look, it can look really hot. I'm short and round and look kind of like a human panda, and I would just look like a panda that was losing its hair. It would not be a good look for me.
Don the Alopecia Panda.
I'm a sad, bald panda.
A Boynton book. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011. That is Tuesday, February 2nd, 22nd, rather, 2011. Coming up later in this hour, entertainment news, also science on the march. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on today via iTunes, you can do that. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Also available on your mobile device, that is mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Just real quickly, back on the thing about the chicks in front of the Planned Parenthood with the jacket and the scrunchie and the blonde and the black roots.
Uh-huh.
I wish, this is the sort of thing that nobody will ever put money towards because I don't control the funding for these kinds of things. Wouldn't you like to see some sort of like actual academia-based analysis of why certain, in this case girls, but I mean just people, gravitate towards certain kind of really, really horrific hairstyles or clothing or just things that everybody else sort of took a vote on like 20 years ago and decided to move on?
Yeah. Why there's a certain sort of socioeconomic class that embraces this thing that everyone else looks at and goes, oh, honey, no.
It's the thing. It's like chunky blonde chicks with a scrunchie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And here's the thing about girls like that. It's not that they're curvy or large or fat or chubby, rather chunky. Chunky is a very specific kind of weight.
Where you kind of built, kind of like a pug, like a human pug.
Yeah, you're on a kind of a theme today. You're a panda.
They're pugs.
All right. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
A massive earthquake hit the New Zealand city of Christchurch on Tuesday, killing 65 people and trapping 200 more in collapsed buildings. The 6.3 magnitude quake shook the South Island city at 12:51 p.m. Christchurch mayor said the city center is like a war zone and the damage is immense. Everybody needs to understand that this is going to be a day of very black news. This man gives a dramatic description as he rolls his camera during the quake.
The floor's trembling and the rocks are falling down in Sumner, just outside Christchurch. This giant rock has just fallen on the RSA building. It's terrifying.
So next hour, I believe, during the Rick Emerson radio program, we're going to be talking to one of our listeners who is in New Zealand. So listener Daniel, who is in New Zealand, who is actually not in Christchurch. I was talking to him last night, actually, via the Skype. And so he has a bunch of friends who are in Christchurch who said that they were actually not going to. He talked to a friend of his and said, hey, I listen to this radio show in the States. Do you think you could go on, you know, via Skype or something and sort of, you know, give a recap? And the guy said that it was actually just so impossible for anybody to predict whether anything was going to be working, whether anything was going to be functioning, whether they were going to continue to get aftershocks, whether fires were going to break out. Apparently, it's just terrible in every way.
Yeah, residents reported bodies lying in the streets while police said falling buildings flattened two buses. The city's iconic cathedral was also badly damaged. Rescue teams have descended on the city and will work through the night to rescue people trapped in the rubble, but officials warned that casualties could be high. New Zealand Civil Defense Director said, we have to be prepared to accept it's going to be a heavy toll. The earthquake was not as strong as the 7.3 quake that hit the region last September, but it was shallower, which led to greater damage. This is Leighton Duncan, who was in a brick building in Christchurch when the quake hit, and he describes what took place.
This is quake two.
Yeah. We just literally watched the walls peel away from the sides of the building and the roof come down on top of us. The room just filled with dust after that.
Jesus. All right. So, and that isn't crazy. And New Zealand's not like a big place.
Comparatively, yeah. No, it's, yeah.
But it is a densely, there's certain sections of it that are very densely populated, I think. And
yeah,
this is certainly,
it's an island, essentially, so you've got, yeah.
By the way, I know that it's too soon to be joking about the earthquake, and so I'm really not. But just now, when you were reading that last sentence, you said the second quake came along, and it was something, but it was, what was it, longer, but it was shallower?
Shallower.
For a second, I thought you were just going to say that the second quake was longer, and it was Shalimar.
Why would I say that?
I don't know, but I mean, come on! It would be great if your city was going to be wrecked by something. How great would it be if it was
by Shalimar?
Wrecked by 1980s soul group Shalimar.
Well, if any 1980s soul group could do it, it would probably be Shalimar.
It's like, I think it was Henry Rollins at one time was talking about El Nino and, you know, the baby, and how ridiculous it was that the baby was destroying everything. And I think he was the one who proposed that instead of El Nino, we call it the first four Black Sabbath albums. So we, you know, San Diego today is under siege and pounding rains and torrents from the first four Black Sabbath albums, which are expected to plague the city for weeks to come. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Police said they arrested a 27-year-old man suspected of shooting a 42-year-old fellow audience member who later died of his wounds. The conflict, this was in Latvia, the conflict took place as the credits rolled during a screening of the Oscar-nominated film Black Swan. Apparently, a man, I seem to have lost part of my story.
Okay, Shalimar.
We're coming back to this. Shalimar ate my story. God, how I hate those 80s soul singers.
Wait a minute. Are you doing a dog ate my homework thing or a Mr. T ate my balls thing?
Whatever works. You can call it what you like.
I say stepping back into 1971. All right.
Okay, wait a minute. I do have it right here. I can start over. Thank you. Thank you, internets. Okay.
All right, I'll just let you occupy yourself.
Okay. Okay, apparently I do have the whole story. It was just badly written.
Well, they're Latvian.
Anyway, there was a 27-year-old man shot a 42-year-old fellow audience member at a screening of Black Swan in Latvia because the man was eating his popcorn too loudly. Gun crime is apparently relatively rare in Latvia, a European Union nation of only 2.2 million people.
I would imagine they got one gun they just sort of have to pass around from neighborhood to neighborhood. And, you know, when it's your turn, you got to make the most of it.
And I thought there'd be more to the story, really, when you hear that one guy killed another guy with a gun because he was chewing his popcorn too loudly.
See, I'm the opposite. I think, what else do you really need to know there? Guy making... Look, how many times have you been in a movie theater, and I think the answer is probably hundreds, and some jackass is making noise, and you're thinking, if I had a gun and nothing to live for, that'd be one dead bastard.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, that's QED. Yeah,
the shooting occurred in the Central Multiplex Cinema in the Latvian capital of Riga at the end of the psychological thriller about a ballet dancer who loses her mind succumbing to pressure to perform.
What do you suppose a multiplex theater in Latvia looks like?
Two.
Yeah.
Two small rooms, about the size of a broom closet, some folding chairs, chickens walking around. This is our multiplex.
You were listening to Legion of News. It's not quite actually THX yet. Still need tweak of system. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news, also science on the march. Here is Don Taylor.
The billionaire septuagenarians, the Koch brothers, who have quietly funneled millions into fighting Obama administration initiatives, are now funding groups opposed to the pro-union protests sweeping Wisconsin. According to the New York Times, the Koch brothers were one of the biggest contributors to the election campaign of Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin, a Republican who has championed the proposed cuts. The Koch brothers also helped finance Americans for Prosperity, a $40 million organization that's currently leading the charge to stem union benefits. Americans for Prosperity has 1.6 million members across the country, and the organization bussed people in from across Wisconsin over the weekend to protest pro-union activists. So they're, like, actually paying...
Importing people from other states to come in and complain.
To
protest the protesters.
To protest the Wisconsin public workers. Yeah. Koch Industries employs roughly 3,000 people in Wisconsin, though when questioned by the Times, a spokesman denied the company has any stake in the protests.
Sure. No, it's a coincidence.
The ties between the Kochs and Wisconsin's Republican leadership hasn't gone unnoticed. At a demonstration on Monday, one protester held a sign reading, "Governor Walker, kick the Koch habit."
Now, is it the Koch brothers?
Yeah, it's pronounced Koch. Okay, it's spelled K-O-C-H, but it's pronounced Koch. Meanwhile, workers in Indiana and Ohio are following Wisconsin's lead by protesting cuts to union power at their state capitals.
Is this all because of the Egypt thing? Remember, like, after the Egypt, it's like a day of rage everywhere where it was like in Syria and Lebanon and, you know, and like Spokane, like everybody was just all pissed off about stuff?
Honestly, I think it's a combination of things. It's the fact that unemployment has been so bad for so long that we've been in a really bad recession that our government has continued to tell us isn't really that bad.
It's over. No, it's not just not that bad, Dawn. It ended 2 years ago.
Meanwhile, you know, people are just like losing their houses all over the place and struggling like crazy to just make ends meet. And then, we see people in other countries protesting. And I think it actually may have dropped a little seed.
Great idea.
People going, you know, I don't have to just sit back and take this. I can complain. And then when the Republicans come in and they start going, oh, yeah, and we're going to, like, make you pay even more for your health. We want to cut your health care. Oh, yeah, and we're not going to, like, let you, like, you know, bargain for more money with your union. And people are just going,
I've always wanted to break a window. Now's my chance.
I think it's just people are just finally you have to push people in America with our Xboxes and our, you know, our fast food and our McDonald's on every corner. You have to push us really, really hard before we're uncomfortable enough to actually protest anything anymore.
No, it's true. It really is.
Think we're reaching that point.
Look, here's the thing. Is like sometimes I'm sitting in my office at home, and it's like I get ready to watch a television show. I can't even be bothered to get up out of the chair and go into the living room, which is 12 feet away. And so I just go, baby, could you turn on the Xbox so I can stream it from that room to my laptop, which is on my lap here? I'm too lazy to stand. So, I mean, really, the odds of me getting me to walk anywhere, I mean, much less in a circle for hours on end, not going to happen.
Well, thousands of workers who have much more stick-to-itiveness than you do turned up at the Indiana Capitol on
Monday.
They're
in Wisconsin. What are they going to do?
Well, no, these are people in Indiana.
They're in Indiana. Fine. What are they going to be doing?
Well,
going to the One Day at a Time Museum?
Anyway, they showed up at their state capitol to resist a bill that would have gutted the union's power. On Tuesday, it's going to be Ohio's turn. Union leaders say upward of 5,000 protesters plan to swarm the state house, where Republican Governor John Kasich is pushing a Republican-backed bill that would restrict state workers' bargaining rights.
A little FYI from me to you. It doesn't really work if you tell them in advance where you're going to appear spontaneously. It doesn't... someone's not reading the memo all the way to the end.
Well, I mean, but you got to organize these people. You can't just get 5,000 people in one place without any prior planning. You kind of got to, like, put up a website or send out some emails
or
something.
Well, that's true. I suppose.
Meanwhile, the standoff continues in Wisconsin over the budget bill that would increase the cost of benefits to public employees and curb their collective bargaining rights. Republican State Senator Glenn Grothman says government has to be able to shift workers around and change job descriptions to tackle the deficit without having to get union permission for every change.
Governor Walker will continue to allow unions to collectively bargain over wages. But over work roles, we have to allow the state, the counties, the school districts and the cities to deploy their workers more efficiently.
Get excess saliva in my mouth.
You can no longer have to negotiate with the union every time you tell somebody to do something differently.
I cover everybody in a thick sheen of spittle every time I talk.
I might actually agree with him if he didn't sound so whiny.
Sounds like Barney Frank, like, underwater.
He's actually whining.
Yes, yes he is.
Grothman's...
He's a Democrat. It's all they know how to do.
No, he's a Republican.
Really?
Yeah, no, he's
What's
actually...
What's wrong with people in Wisconsin?
Actually,
it's a world gone mad back there.
Grothman says particularly in tough economic times, local and state governments can't have unions dictating how those entities should deploy their workforces.
Wisconsin is some funhouse mirror of a state.
We are in a fiscal crisis.
Sorry. Hold on a second. I gotta just stop for a moment.
Oh, he shouldn't use the word fiscal. He just should not be saying that.
Someone should
tell him what words to avoid.
Oh, tell me more about how you're a ninth level paladin.
We are in a fiscal crisis here. And part of solving that fiscal crisis is allowing the boss to be the boss, be it a city administrator or a school superintendent.
It's like being in the front row of a Gallagher show.
Oh. Would you play him saying fiscal crisis again?
We are in a fiscal crisis here.
Yeah.
Awesome. I guess I should have known he's a Republican because he's actually there, not in hiding somewhere. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. They found Democratic State Senator John Erpenbach. They found him somewhere.
Erpenbach.
And he says the unions already have given the Republican governor huge concessions to help balance the budget, but they're sticking to their guns on the collective bargaining issue.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this a soundbite?
Yeah.
This is three. I'm sorry. I got all distracted by the guy doing the
crisis.
By the fiscal crisis. Hold on a second. I don't know where the hell I put that.
Okay.
It's somewhere.
Well,
Erpenbach?
The Democrat guy said something. Okay. Yeah.
And Erpenbach, where Erpenbach. Willie and Waylon wanted to go with the boys?
I just keep thinking about an Erlenmeyer flask, but I can't come up with a joke about it.
No, I got nothing there. Hold on, I just got it one more time.
We are in a fiscal crisis here.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's great.
By the way, can I just tell you that I was talking to a Daniel listener in New Zealand last night? And look, I don't mean to be this guy, but... Don, isn't technology something? I was just sitting on my big American ass in my chair at home last night watching. I had my laptop on my lap last night in the office, and in the corner of the screen, I'm watching House. In the other corner of the screen, and I don't have a big screen, but I got in the one corner, I'm watching House. The other corner, I'm answering email. In the lower right-hand corner, I'm on Skype talking to Daniel, who's in New Zealand, where, like, they just had earthquakes. And then, I don't know, I had like a Tamagotchi or something, at the, you know, whatever it is people do now. I don't even know what the reference would be there. What do you do now? I had a Ruffle Waffle in the lower left-hand corner of the screen.
Okay.
It was just mind-boggling. I just had this moment where I realized that I was watching a television program, having the Ruffle Waffle, answering email, and then also talking to a guy in New Zealand, like simultaneously in the same screen. And it was one of those, like, the future is now and I am in it moments, which I kind of don't have all that often because, you know, you're sort of surrounded by it all the time. Like, if your iPhone with you 24 hours a day and you sort of, every now and again, you go like, well, this is amazing. But then you sort of go back to forgetting about how amazing it is. Yeah. I really did have that moment last night. But so I was talking to him and we were trying to sync up an appearance later today on the Rick Emerson show about the earthquake. And he actually said, it was one of those things that was funny and then made me feel like some sort of weird American guilt for at the same time for some reason. He just said, well, you know, we'll try to put it again, you know, together. I know you guys are really busy, though, what with Wisconsin and all.
Yeah.
You know, and like we're in Portland,
we're, by the way,
it's not like we're up to our eyeballs in Wisconsinites here or something. But he seemed legitimately concerned that he would be eating into our Wisconsin coverage by talking about an earthquake.
I think other people in other countries often don't really realize how large the United States is.
And that we don't care about anybody in those states.
You know, and that, like if you're in England, for example, the entire country of England is about the size of Wisconsin.
It's a street.
So if, like, something huge is going on, you know, they're all concerned. Here, it's like, that's way over there someplace. We don't.
It's like when I hear people talk about, you know, like, spending their entire, you know, growing up in you know, in London or something, and I mean, London's a swell place and all, but London basically just seems to me like it's a couple of city blocks, and that's about. And then you go, well, I've seen this statue before. Well, we're back at the beginning. It just seems like some sort of a it seems like some sort of a small Escher painting of a town where you walk in one direction and then, like on Land of the Lost, you find yourself back at the beginning on the other side of town again.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, yeah, as someone who has never been there, I always have gotten the impression there's basically, like, three parts, and that's it. You've got, like, you know, Piccadilly Circus, you've got, like, the place where Big Ben is, and in my mind, Big Ben and, like, Scotland Yard are probably, like, right next door to each other, and then the river's going by, and then somewhere on the other side of the river, there's, like, a bunch of dark alleys where Jack the Ripper killed people.
Just Visigoths. Yes. Yeah. Well, that's all that, because I am an ugly American, that's all that London was to me, was just a series of things I'd seen in films. It was like going, you know what it was? It was like touring a giant's charm bracelet. That's all it was. Just a whole lot of nothing. And then you're like, hey, the Old Bailey, V for Vendetta, woo! You know, I say, just irritating everyone there by being just the moronic American.
Shut up, you. And then they call you a wanker.
No, they call, I swear to God, at one point I just heard a guy, like I was buying like some, whatever, some grub of some of their horrible English food. Hey, I'd like a bag of your English swill, please. And I swear to God, the guy just went like 50p, yank. You know, just like under his breath. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do science.
Here's your science on the march for Tuesday here at Legion of News, part of Cascadia.fm.
The so-called visual word form area of the brain may not be strictly visual after all. A recent study in the journal Current Biology found that this portion of the brain, usually associated with visual reading, is also tapped when blind people read using Braille. The team, led by researchers at the Institute for Medical Research Israel, Canada, monitored 8 blind subjects with a functional MRI machine while subjects read Braille with their fingers. The VWFA, the visual word form area, was the most active area of the blind subjects' brains, just like the brains of people who read visually. If it's true the parts of the brain are specialized for sensory input, other parts of the brain focusing on tactile sensory would have lit up during the experiment. But this was not the case. Authors of the studies write that the work supports a metamodal theory of the brain, or one in which portions of the brain are task-based and should not be limited to one mode of sensory input. In fact, they believe the VWFA needs to be redefined or perhaps renamed to more accurately describe its purpose.
I don't understand the story.
Well, we've always tended to believe that, like, say, well, we know, for example, there's a section of the brain that they know lights up and is used when people read.
Right.
And they called it the visual word form area.
But it's not just for looking at stuff.
Apparently it's not just for looking at stuff, because when blind people read with Braille, this same part of the brain
is being used. Oh,
that's
interesting. Okay.
So it has nothing to do with the way the information is coming in. It has to do with the way the brain is using it.
Here's the thing I've always wondered. What happens if you're a blind guy, let's say blind since birth, and then you take acid? You see
wow.
stuff?
I don't
Ooh,
know.
Ooh, see?
Yeah.
Hang on. See if it kind of feels like you're high right now, doesn't it?
I feel like that every day that
yeah.
I'm here.
Cabbages and kings, man.
Dogs appear to empathize with us to the point where some therapy dogs even seem to take on the emotions of their sick or distressed human charges, according to a new paper in the latest issue of Biology Letters. The matter's more complicated than you might think because researchers need to tease apart true empathy from a phenomenon known as emotional contagion. Emotional contagion is more of a knee-jerk reaction to various behaviors or other cues. For example, if you yawn, others near you, including dogs, might start to yawn too. They're not necessarily empathizing with you, although areas of the brain tied to empathy are involved. In fact, the mimicry is primarily triggered at a subconscious level. No one's sure why it happens. Some scientists suspect it has to do with communicating levels of alertness and coordinating sleep schedules. But dogs do more than just copy us, according to the study. Apparently, the study shows that pets, specifically dogs, behave as upset as children when they're exposed to familiar people who are faking distress, suggesting they actually feel sympathetic concern. It's also been reported that untrained dogs may be sensitive to human emergencies and may act appropriately to summon help.
Yeah, I think this is... I don't say that as some hippy-trippy, like, he feels my vibrations dog person. But I think it's been pretty well established at this point that dogs occupy... In the truest sense of the word, people always say unique, often by calling something very unique. But dogs occupy an actually unique position in the animal world, that there is no other animal that straddles the lines between domestication and the human world and the animal world as dogs do.
Right.
And that the dogs who were more... Dogs who, essentially dogs who got along better with humans and were more integrated better with human society were the ones that were kept and the ones who were bred, and the rest of them were either killed or left behind. So we have over time, like 14,000 years or whatever, just bred dogs to integrate, not fully, but integrate with human society far more than any other animal. There's no sympathy gerbil out there.
Well, there was a thing about dogs I just saw recently, and one of the things they were looking at was that dogs are pretty much the only animals that... we'll read visual cues from our eyes, that if we can look at something, and that will actually cue the dog to go over and pick it up or to check it out. And that doesn't even work with chimps. Chimps can be trained to, like, you know, pick things up based on color, or actually, you know, you kind of like point at something or make them go do something, but they won't respond to visual cues on our faces. And dogs, you can keep your face completely still and just look at one of a line of objects, and the dog will pick up that's the one it's supposed to go do.
That's awesome. How can I abuse that power? Because that's sort of you can sit there and go, kill that one over there, and just sort of, you know, just make long eye contact with the guy at work who's stealing your sandwiches or something, and then the trash is taken out.
Well, they've also done studies, because there have been a lot of cases where you hear stories, anecdotal stories about somebody just sort of falls down and has a heart attack,
right,
or somebody's in danger, and some strange dog who isn't trained, or their dog, or even a dog that doesn't belong to them, and the dog becoming alarmed and going and getting somebody and getting help. They've done experiments where they have had people pretend to have a heart attack and fall down
and
be distraught.
Oh, and the dog, like, freaks out?
No, the dogs just ignore them. The dogs don't respond at all. And so what they think is that the dogs in the studies, because the dogs in those studies just look confused and they didn't do very much.
What are you doing?
The scientists think that dogs, because they are so sensitive to so many cues, they not only sense, they also sense a change in the way we smell.
So you're not putting off the chemical change, or you're perspiring differently,
or
whatever.
The change in our breathing, the way we sound.
So you can't really, it's almost like they're a lie detector.
Right.
Like they're not detecting the other.
We can't fool them into thinking that we're having an emergency when we're not actually having an emergency.
That's interesting. All right.
So there you go. But when we are having an emergency, they actually may really genuinely feel sorry for us and empathize with us.
Oh, who's empathetic? Who? Hey, did I tell you we're having a therapy llama? I'm going to see if we can get him to come by the studio.
Oh, that would be great.
We're having a therapy llama come by Outlook Portland, so I'm going to see if we can kind of just bring him on over here later on in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
I'll let you know in advance.
Yes,
though.
Please.
Okay.
Inkjet printing technology has inspired scientists to look for ways to build sheets of skin that could one day be used for grafts in burn victims. One technique involves a portable bioprinter that could be carried to wounded soldiers on the battlefield, where it would scan the injury, take cells from the patient, and print a section of compatible skin.
It's all well and good, and it really honestly is, but there's nothing that grosses me out like referring to skin as sheets. Because it's almost never in a good way. It's almost always in the leper way, you know, or like in the Ebola way, where something is coming off, you know, and they're using that as the unit of measurement. How many sheets of skin have you lost today, Bob?
They're also looking at a another method that uses three-dimensional printers combining donor cells, biofriendly gel, and other materials to build cartilage. The 3D printer was shown at work building a prototype of an ear during a half-hour demonstration at a Washington science conference. Hod Lipson of Cornell University said it worked much like an inkjet printer. It spits out plastic to gradually build an object layer by layer. After a couple of hours, you end up with a real physical object you can hold in your hand. Just imagine, he said, if you could take cells from a donor, culture them, put them into an ink, and recreate an implant that's alive and made of the original cells from the donor.
That's awesome.
How useful that would be in terms of avoiding rejection.
Now, you listen to the Freakonomics podcast, do you not?
Yes.
Have you heard the one about the guy who has the food printer?
That, yes, and that place. If there was one place on Earth that I would like to go for a day and just hang out and see what they're doing, it's that place in Seattle.
Yeah, Intellectual Ventures.
Yes.
Nathan Myhrvold's place, yeah.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, where there's a guy there's just... Because they already have 3D printers they have at Johns Hopkins. They'll print out three-dimensional renderings of brain aneurysms and stuff so they know like how to operate and what the best procedure is. Yeah, and so they're developing this thing where they just they make a three-dimensional printing out of food particles, which they then inject with water and cook with lasers. And so it's just a replicator. I mean,
yeah.
It's a thing that just prints food, but not like a sheet of paper like Wonka food. I mean, it's like it prints
like
a chicken leg or something. It's
yeah.
just insane. Insane, and yet when you hear the guy explain it, like you go, well, that's not insane. I guess it makes perfect sense. So, I mean, this is why I'm skeptical of hippies who, they poo-poo the role of science in food. Because I'm telling you, right now, the replicator within our lifetime, within 50 years, we'll have that in our home. You can just...
with a thing where you can, like, build a new ear.
That's what I'm saying,
If you need one.
So you could get some flan, you could get yourself a kidney, like, all at once. No waiting. Single machine.
And you could, like, glue the ears to your robot punching machine over across the room.
Yes. Somebody wants to know if we can ask the therapy llama what man's purpose is on Earth. All right, thank you. Are we still in science here?
That was it. That was
all right,
the
that
science.
That's the end of science. That is your Science on the March for Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more by going to squireselectric.com. It is squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, going on 13 years in Portland. They started in Portland, I believe, the same month. I think within about 2 or 3 weeks of when my show first went on here. So they've been in Portland the entire time. They've been longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Show, and now listeners to and supporters of Legion of News since essentially the very beginning. So if you're listening to this program and you enjoy it, you find it's making you a better rounded and more complete individual. It's improving your life in ways almost beyond numeration or measurement. You can thank Squires Electric for that, and you can go to find out more about them at squireselectric.com. Or 503-252-1609. Wires or wiring in your home or business, regardless of what kind of wires you are dealing with, whatever issues you may have coming to the fore, they can make sure that it's taken care of and that it's done so properly and efficiently and that it's done right the first time. 503-252-1609. That is Squires Electric, proud sponsors of Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor.
Sheriffs in Texas are trying to piece together a bizarre incident Saturday night in which a bulldozer crashed through at least two homes. Around 7 p.m. Saturday night, a bulldozer somehow took off and left a path of destruction down West Cliff in Odessa, Texas. It appeared the bulldozer plowed through a home, a travel trailer, and then crashed into the end of a mobile home. The bulldozer ripped open the mobile home, causing debris to be spread everywhere. Neighbors said they had to break out the back window of the bulldozer to turn it off because the doors of the bulldozer were locked. It's unknown how the bulldozer started, but the Ector County Sheriff's Office is working to determine if this was just a bad accident or intentional. Amazingly, no one was injured as the bulldozer went through the neighborhood.
Now, again, I'm missing something here. So was the there was no driver?
No.
It just sort of appeared.
It just appeared.
Crashing
doors,
through things.
Doors locked, like something out of a Stephen King novel.
Okay.
Just driving through people's homes.
Okay, that's all right.
One family of five are being helped by the Red Cross because they lost their home. Fortunately, they were not actually home at the time that the bulldozer crashed through their house.
That's a thing you wouldn't expect. I mean...
No.
That's not, you can't really prepare for that mentally because I don't think you'd ever anticipate that happening to you.
No. Particularly with no one actually driving it.
Yeah. You're listening to Legion of News. I'm going to not think about that anymore. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we'll have your snuff watch, taser watch. Mr. Seth Aaron of Project Runway will be in the studio sitting right here in this chair to my immediate right. Be counting down his top five. So Seth Aaron of Project Runway today. And something else that struck me is very important earlier. Wait. No, it's gone, but we'll have clue number two for the EH Vending Name That Snack contest. Oh, we'll have a house recap from last night. Talk a bit about your Breaking Bad viewing, because you finished the first season of Breaking Bad. So we'll talk about that and other things of this nature. I'm going to get ahead of myself. I have other stuff to talk about. I'm going to over-tease. Okay. So that's what's coming up next hour at the Rick Emerson Show. That is Snuff Watch, Taser Watch, our house recap, and Seth Aaron of Project Runway going to be in the studio with us. That is next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Are you listening? Here's Don Taylor.
Energy analysts say the unrest in North Africa and the Middle East, almost certainly means higher oil and gas prices in the coming weeks. Analyst and trader Phil Flynn says in the long term, perhaps getting rid of some dictators...
This engine is full of Phil Flynn.
Phil Flynn. Perhaps getting rid of some dictators will make the region more stable and bring down energy prices. Yeah. But in the short term, we're almost certain to see market volatility.
Is this Libya 1?
Oil one. Even though we like to think that's going to be the outcome, we can't bet on that in the short term, because in the short term there's more risk to supply than there has been in some time.
Well, thanks, Phil. I appreciate that.
Where's our all-purpose soundbite?
I guess at this point we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about their expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
Ask your doctor about Phil Flynn.
Neil Beveridge of Asia Pacific Oil and Gas says it's hard to predict how high prices might go.
Libya is the largest reserve holder in Africa with about 44 billion barrels. It produces about 2% of the world's crude at 1.6 million barrels. But, you know, the world only has around 5 million barrels of spare capacity. So if we lost supply or we saw disruption of supply from Libya, you could be looking at a halving of global spare capacity that would have a significant impact.
What accent is that?
I don't know. South African? Irish?
And it's like every now and again I kept expecting to do like a little jig, but then he would become Australian for a moment.
Yeah. Libya is the largest reserve holder in Africa with about 44 billion barrels. It produces about 2% of the world.
That's freaking me out. It's like a wavery piece of tape or something.
Is it a tea?
Yeah, it's like...
it's a little Scottish or something. I don't know. Is it tea?
It's like listening to a reel-to-reel when it's just going... Blah, 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 blah.
Plus, everything he was saying really fast, and it was just making me dizzy, and it didn't make any sense.
He's making it up. Mm.
The price of gas has inched up 5 cents over the past 2 weeks, now averaging $3.18 a gallon. That's not much, according to Trilby Lundberg of the Lundberg Survey.
Yeah.
But that could change quickly because the turmoil in the Middle East is causing uncertainty in the market.
Middle East, completely unpredictable. This could prove far off, and we could see another 20 or 30 cents at the pump if crude oil prices go crazy.
Here's the thing about Trilby Lundberg is I instinctively trust her. Whether the news is good, whether the news is bad, even if you sense that it's no more than a guesstimate from her, that she's just sort of, you know, she doesn't really know for sure, but she's giving you the best information she can with the knowledge she has. I trust her. I believe that she believes what she's saying.
Trilby Lundberg would not steer us
That's
wrong.
She wouldn't lie to us. No. She's not that type, Don.
Four Americans, including a couple from Seattle, were taken hostage last Friday, and they have been shot and killed by their Somali pirate captors, according to military officials.
Why is that, Don?
Because they're rich bastards?
Because they went off the path.
Oh, because they went off the path. And because they're rich bastards.
That's Don Taylor saying that. Rick Emerson isn't.
The two couples were on an around-the-world sailing trip and were captured off the coast of Oman after breaking away from a larger group of yachts. After seizing the ship, the pirates began sailing towards the coast of Somali while being trailed by the U.S. military. In a statement released this morning, officials said they boarded the ship, named the SV Quest, after shots were fired around 1 a.m. The statement said, as U.S. forces responded to the gunfire, reaching and boarding the Quest, the forces discovered all four hostages had been shot by their captors. Despite immediate steps to provide life-saving care, all four hostages ultimately died of their wounds. Out of the 19 pirates believed to be involved in the kidnapping, two were killed in the fighting, and 13 more were arrested. According to CNN, two other pirates had already been taken into custody, and the remains of two others were found on board, but they don't know at this time how they, or they're not saying how those guys might have died.
If you have to, if you have to go out at some point, maybe before your time, chronologically speaking, I'm just saying that there are worse ways to go out than being taken out by pirates. I mean, that's sort of a thing that you'd feel okay having that in your obituary.
In the aftermath, yeah. I'm sure the experience is so.
Well, I'm not saying you want... No. I'm not saying like you wake up in the morning and go, what shall we do today? Let's be killed by pirates, Mumsy. Okay, Chip. I'm just saying, like, in other words, if the angel of death appeared to you and said, it is your time, and you say, but no, I just, crap. I don't want it to be my time. And he goes, you know, it does not matter. Salmon moose, you know, and it's your whole, like, you got to go. But he gives you the option. Mm-hmm. And he says, like, you can either, suffocate in some shag carpeting. Or you could just fall into a vat of bubbling toffee, or you can be taken down by pirates or like other. I think I would go for pirates.
See, because those are all terrible options.
Well, of course you're dying. Of course they're terrible options.
So, I mean, there's quick ways of dying too. The whole being taken out by pirates, although it sounds great, you know, in the past tense, was killed by pirates. The actual experience of being kidnapped and held hostage and then eventually killed by pirates would be pretty terrible.
Well, look, it's not a perfect world, Don. This is, I mean, you know. I'm just saying it's not a binary system. It's not like the angel of death appears and gives you a series of gives you. It's a bit of a Hobson's choice just being alive on this rock. So just saying, I'm trying to see the flagon as half full. You know, see the mead horn as half full, Don.
You know, if you were actually kidnapped and killed by real pirates, and you had friends who were pirate reenactors, that would be awkward. That would make the funeral really awkward. If every time somebody said that you were killed by pirates, people would just be sneaking looks over at your friends,
like looking down at their feet and sort of like shuffling in place, and kind of kicking the ground with their toe.
Yeah,
stupid pirates. All right,
Let's do entertainment.
This just took a strange turn. All right. Your entertainment news for Tuesday.
Director Danny Boyle, known for Slumdog Millionaire and 127 Hours, among other films, will return to the British stage after 15 years with Frankenstein, a new adaptation of Mary Shelley's Gothic chiller about a scientist who builds himself a man. The show opens Tuesday at London's National Theatre, and its run is already sold out. In part, that's due to anticipation about what the visually inventive Boyle will pull off. It's also a product of the high-profile casting of Benedict Cumberbatch, a rising star recently seen as the dashing Baker Street detective in BBC's TV series Sherlock.
I'm not even going to say it.
I know, it's a great name, isn't it? Benedict Cumberbatch. And he's great. You still haven't seen that BBC Sherlock.
Zangledank.
He's brilliant. Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller, who was in Boyle's Trainspotting.
Yes.
He's also going to be in it. The two actors alternate the roles of Victor Frankenstein and his creation, a decision that plays up the idea that the scientist and the monster are mirror images, two halves of a flawed human whole. Jay-Z won the latest round in his 5-year legal battle with a British chef over naming rights. The rap artist launched court proceedings against Terry Miller over the use of the word Rockefeller, the names of the chef's eatery in Newcastle in northeastern England. The millionaire music star, who is married to songstress Beyoncé, claimed the name would confuse people into thinking Miller's business was associated with his Rockefeller Records empire. Yeah, because, you know.
Because you think of Jay-Z as being a master of the culinary arts.
Right.
Yes.
After Miller, 52, won a ruling granting him the exclusive trademark and the right to use the name in the UK, Rockefeller Records appealed the decision, and now British lawyers hired by the record label to fight the case have been told their appeal was upheld at a hearing in London. Oliver Stone was honored with the Master of Cinema Award from the Boulder International Festival. During his career, Stone, who received the award on Sunday, directed the movies Platoon, Born on the 4th of July, Wall Street, and W. That was a film festival in Boulder.
Okay.
And he won an award. The book In Blind Allegiance to Sarah Palin isn't ready for the presses yet, but that has stopped people from leaking the Palin tell-all online. The manuscript, written by a former Palin aide named Frank Bailey, was sent to the Anchorage Daily News last Friday, and it consists of nearly 500 pages of analysis, gossip, and allegation based on more than 60,000 emails Bailey sent and received while working for the ex-vice presidential candidate. Blind Allegiance opens 3 months before Palin resigned as governor of Alaska and goes on to detail how minor slights became obsessions and how she staged coordinated attacks through Fox News surrogates against political opponents. The book also asserts that the former governor violated election law by collaborating with the Republican Governors Association during the 2006 campaign and allowed personal matters to influence a state Supreme Court appointment. The manuscript was circulated by writer Joe McGinnis. last seen in the news for renting the house next door to the Palins while working on his own book about her, and was apparently leaked against the will of the authors.
I've never seen that reality show of hers, by the way. That the thing that I intended to watch because it was, I don't know, people were sort of talking about it, and then it just completely fell off my radar. I think it's, here's the thing, as I was going to watch it, and then I didn't, realizing that she's not going anywhere. I just was able to put a pin in that because it's not like she's going to vanish from the national stage. She will be back, in time to fight for the nomination of, in the Republican Party for the 2012 election. So it doesn't really matter. I'm going to get my fill of her, sooner rather than later. So, I can just skip that.
I just find her so personally unpleasant that all of the pretty vistas of mountains and mooses in mountain streams and things like that could not convince me to watch Sarah Palin.
She's got that trashy hot daughter, though. That carries a lot of weight with me.
Okay.
It's like with George W. Bush, you know what I mean? He was not all that bright and racked up $3 trillion in debt and got us involved in two ill-advised wars.
But
totally hot, trashy daughters,
hot, trashy
though. Yeah, especially that one that looks like Brandy Taylor.
John McCain, hot daughter.
That's what I'm talking about. Boy, Yes.
Yep. A national religious group staged a protest outside the Beck Center for the Arts in Lakewood, Ohio, on Friday. It was opening night for Jerry Springer the Opera at the theater on Detroit Avenue, and protesters don't like the way it portrays Jesus and Christianity. As Catholics, we love our Lord Jesus Christ, and we're here to make a public act of reparation, said Robert Ritchie from America Needs Fatima. That's the name of their group. Jerry Springer's longtime television show is the muse for the production. Protester Kathleen Nisnik said it's blasphemous against the Holy Eucharist. They picture our Lord being really fat and in a diaper, and it's just totally sacrilegious and blasphemous against Christianity.
I'm sorry, I'm so confused here. So, did you say Beck was involved in this somehow?
No, that's just a guy.
Okay.
A guy... Well, no, the place is called the Beck Center for the Arts.
Okay, all right.
In Ohio.
It's a place, so it's the Beck Center for Performing Arts doing a musical about Jerry Springer.
Right.
In which Jesus is depicted.
Yeah, I had to go look it up because it didn't say in the story. All these people just kept saying about how God is an infinite being and how awesome everything is.
And doesn't wear a diaper.
And I couldn't figure out what it was that they were actually upset about, so I had to go look it up elsewhere. And I found
in what way does Jerry Springer fit into this whole thing?
Well, it's an opera about Jerry Springer. I'm surprised you didn't know about this one.
Well,
it's been around for a while.
I think might have been one of many Jerry Springer projects on my radar.
Yeah, it's an opera about Jerry Springer, and apparently there's a lot of what they consider blasphemous content. For example, there is a lady who sings Jerry Elias Ale. How do you pronounce it? Eliason. Jerry Eliason, which is a take on Kyrie Eliason.
Kyrie Eliason.
Kyrie Eliason from The Mass. And they're singing Jerry Eliason.
So it means Jerry be with us. That's
right.
Awesome.
Jesus is introduced as, quote, the hypocrite son of the fascist tyrant on high. He wears a diaper, is fat and effeminate, and later admits, actually, I'm a bit gay. Eve gropes Jesus in an indecent manner while the Annunciation is described as a rape. And ultimately, a part of what they're really upset about is that God is portrayed as a fat man in a white suit who complains about being blamed for everyone's problems.
Is this like, does God appear as a guest on the Springer show or something?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out the logistics of how it is that they're shoehorning Jesus into what really ought to be Jerry Springer's shining moment.
Yeah, Jesus is a fat guy in a diaper. And he's effeminate and gay. God is a fat man in a white suit who complains about being blamed for everyone's problems. He invites Jerry Springer to join him to sit in heaven beside me, hold my hand, and guide me. And at the end of the opera, Jerry Springer emerges as the true savior of mankind.
Well, this just sounds like an accurate rendering of the facts.
Yeah.
I mean, really. First of all, because if you're God, I mean, the idea that God is just sort of like a spongy guy sitting around in a linen suit. I mean, really, what does he have to get off his ass for? I mean, he's God. He doesn't have to move fast for anybody.
Yeah.
Also, he probably does just tire of, I think as the late Sam Kinison once said, just wherever you go of your Jesus, lepers will find you, Just constantly, you can't even take a whiz at some guy and they're, Jesus, will you look at this?
Well, a guy named Ken Kowalski, who is a supporter of the community center, says, I haven't seen it. I doubt that those people have seen it. It sounds to me like it's just a satire, and I think people need to lighten up.
By the way, for those of you wondering what the weather like weather is like in places that aren't here, apparently in Seattle there's a bit of snow falling.
Is there?
I don't really care about that all that much because I'm not in Seattle. I'm not going to be in Seattle. Unlike my wife, who, by the way, is driving to Tacoma today. Aww. So enjoy that. Enjoy being marooned in the thriving metropolis of Tacoma, the most romantic city in America, for the better part of a week. I say that only so I can mention that this listener's name is Dick Palmer.
Dick Palmer.
There you go. Okay, the end.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Actor Kiefer Sutherland is in talks to star in a drama pilot called...
I swear to God, I thought you were going to say Intoxicated.
Huh. Okay. He's in talks to star in a drama pilot called Touch from Heroes creator Tim Kring. The story centers on a dad whose mute autistic son could predict events before they occur.
Does he bang them out in Morse code on the table with his forehead?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think this sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah, it seems ill-advised.
Yeah. I keep not sharing the story, and I have to do this. Keith Scott Brown, 55, was charged last week with abusing Desiree, Deandra, and Melody, all members of the popular Juilliard-trained quintet, the Five Browns. The women had chosen to be identified in court papers. The elder Brown, their father, arrived in Provo, Utah, with scratches to his face from Monday's crash of his Porsche, which sent him and his wife, Lisa Brown, to the hospital. The accident occurred 4 days after charges were filed. In an agreement with prosecutors, Brown pleaded guilty to sodomy on a child under 14 and two charges of sex abuse of a child, all felonies. The group are a classical piano group. They're all adults now, and they all trained at Juilliard, and they're Mormon.
Does it seem like there ought to be some sort of an edgy Broadway number called "Sada Me, Sada You"? Maybe not.
Maybe not.
I'm just full of good ideas today. But here's the thing: is none of them can get out because there's this train wreck of bad ideas that are sort of clogging the highway of my mouth.
You're just an idea machine.
Yeah, my mouth is just one big Lincoln tunnel, and it's just jammed with deserted and abandoned the cars.
See, I was thinking of it more like a popcorn popper. How some of them come out like just delicious, fluffy piece of popcorn, and then some of them just like don't pop, and there's this scorchy, like seedy bits at the bottom.
Well, we'll give it another try next hour. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program encircles the globe with its own particular brand of whimsy. That is coming up at rickemersonshow.com today. Snuff Watch, Taser Watch, and from Project Runway, Mr. Seth Aaron will be in the studio with us. Here's Don Taylor.
That's all the entertainment.
All right, there's your entertainment news. There's your entertainment news for Tuesday. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com.
The University of Wisconsin's medical school is investigating charges that its doctors wrote fake sick notes for protesters so they could skip work to rally against Governor Scott Walker's proposed cutbacks to unions at benefits. As demonstrations escalated over the weekend, doctors in white lab coats set up a station outside the state capitol and handed out notes to anybody who wanted one.
That's pretty great.
Lou Sanner, a doctor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, justified the notes by telling the Associated Press that many of the demonstrators seemed to be suffering from stress. When briefed about the matter, a spokeswoman for the medical school informed Fox News that the school was launching an investigation into the matter.
That's awesome. By the way, now see, here's the sort of thing that somebody sends, and I don't know whether to take this seriously or not. We were talking about the replicator earlier that could make, like, skin or something. It says, Jay Leno has a 3D replicator that makes auto parts for his old-ass cars. Now, I don't know whether somebody's screwing with this or whether that's real. That seems like a thing that could be real. Because it's just metal, and it would just be molding.
Yeah.
So all you would really need is the ability to mold on the fly, as it were, to have an ad hoc mold created or whatever. And then if you need, I don't know, something for your camshaft, you just you just press the button. He's I need one of these, and then it spits it out.
The company my husband works for, they manufacture dental stuff. Caps and crowns and full dentures and all that stuff and bridges.
Do they manufacture them using homeless people and pliers?
No.
Okay.
They've been using like the CAD/CAM machines for a while to do molds and things like that anyway. But they're starting to actually use 3D technology in the stuff they do now. They can actually take photographs of what needs to be done and then they can create. They can create the mold, like, on a computer, and then they can use the CAD machine to, like, carve out a 3D mold without anybody actually having to chip it by hand, and it's much more accurate.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know who's going to be ruined by this, though, is that industry of people that, like, make radishes into roses or whatever. They're going to be screwed because you'll be able to say, like, computer, make me a radish and a rose, and it'll just spit the thing out.
How awesome would that
be,
though, to get one of those and, yeah.
You know, like those guys that'll just, because, like, the thing with the cake now, you can already take in, like, a photograph, and they'll scan it onto the cake, like, in colored sugar or whatever. And that's not the same, because that didn't fool anybody. But it's, like, the thing about, like, where you go and you buy, like, you know, like, you buy, like, a cake, and the guy's decorated it by hand, and he's created some huge, like, trellises of a castle out of, you know, out of, like, caramelized sugar or something. Those guys are totally going to be run out of business by this machine.
Yeah, if you could carve elaborate things out of, that is interesting. I'm sorry. I'm off in, like, my own little flight of fancy
evil
now.
Genius mode.
I am.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll just leave you to your evil. This has been another exciting installment of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer, Bruce Egler, Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com, following a brief musical interlude. Today we'll have your snuff watch, taser watch, and Mr. Seth Aaron will be in the studio with us as well. Don't forget you can get this program later on the day from iTunes or via the direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News.